Thanks for coming. Before we begin tonight's class, an important announcement. We're very excited and we'd love to invite the entire community to come join us this Saturday night, this Matzah Shabbos, on the 17th of Iyar, going to the 18th, May 17th at 9:30 p.m. We're having our annual Lag BaOmer celebration, but this year it's going to be on a whole new scale. It's going to be outside. We used to have it in the shul, but we've gotten a little crowded here. So it's going to be outside in the parking lot of Western Kosher, the Pico store, a little bit east of La Brea and Pico, 4817 West Pico Boulevard. Look at the advertisements. You can find it on our website. The cards will accompany the CDs. You see posters around. This is going to be this week, Saturday night. And boy, oh boy, is it going to be a celebration. It's going to be a big video screen from Maron, from the festivities that are happening in Eretz Yisrael by Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Plenty of food, a food truck, a live big band, torch dancing, all kinds of fun and it's going to be very, very special, very uplifting and very energetic and very, very a real spiritual, fiery celebration. If you'd like to get, anybody that's ever been by our Lag BaOmer event, it's very unique. It's very different than what's out there. It has a real Jewish mystical flavor. It has a real flavor of Maron and Lag BaOmer. So everybody, please come. It's for men, women, and children. Bring your friends, your families, your cousins, your neighbors, anybody you know, and even those who you don't know. Bring people. This is this week, Matzah Shabbos. The more, the happier it's going to be. I would like to thank also all those who sponsored for this, especially Moti Slatowitz and his family and others who also dedicated to help this event happen. We would also like to offer to the greater community. Mayan Yisrael is continuing the teachings of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. That's what we do. We're here to prepare the world for Mashiach in spreading the esoteric elements of the Torah Reb Shimon Bar Yochai began. So we will be offering everyone that wants to have a zchus of lighting a torch in honor of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and in their name, the name of their family, for refuah, for parnasa, for any blessing. You can call us or go on our website and sponsor a torch. They're $100 a torch to sponsor. It will be very, very special. We'll be lighting lots of torches. We'll announce the names and the dedications, at the event. So please, everyone, this is a direct zchus for Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, because that's what he wants, that his Torah should be spread, and that is what we're doing over here at Mayon, day in and day out. So thanks in advance for all those who will participate. I want to announce a few dedications tonight. Baruch Hashem, there are quite some dedications. We'll do it quite quickly. The CD this week was sponsored by Jody Leance and her family. This is in honor of her husband Stephen's birthday. Today was his birthday. May Hashem bless him with a shnas bracha natzlacha, an amazing good year with abundant blessings, begashmius beruchnis and everything. Thank you so much for the entire Leance family. Another sheer sponsor today was by an anonymous. This is in honor of his grandfather's yahrzeit, Avram ben Herschel, on the 15th of Iyar. May his neshama be elevated to the greatest of heights, and much, much bracha to you, anonymous, and your family, with all the good in the physical and in the spiritual. Then we have another dedication. This was by Rivka Shulman, used to be a Rothschild. She used to live over here in our community, and she's still keeping up with Mayon. And he's dedicating this year in honor of her birthday and a whole bunch of birthdays in her family for her children. So we're going to do it very quickly. On the 14th of Iyar is her birthday, Rivka Sarerleya Bashena Etka. And then on the 16th, the 18th, the 26th, and the 5th of Sivan. These are the birthdays of all a whole bunch of other children, Menachem Mendel and Aaron Leib and Bracha and Schneer Zalman, all of them Ben Rivka Saraleya and Bas Rivka Saraleya. May they all have an amazing year of growth, of prosperity, and you should raise them in good health. One more birthday for in our family, Chaim Shimon and Bas Yagila. Now, this is on the 29th of Iyar. Much, much blessings to the entire family, and a shnas bracha natzlacha to everyone. Another dedication today was by Shelley and Shirley Perlis. This is in honor of Shelley's mom's yard site that was today, the 12th of Iyar. Penina Sylvia Bas Meir, may her neshama go higher and higher. Much, much blessings for the entire family and everything. Another dedication was by Kevin and Bluma Trapp. This was in honor of the grandfather's yard site, two grandfathers. One was Moshe Velvel ben Yaakov on Lag Bomer, and the other one is Lazer ben Levi. That's the day after Lag Bomer, next week, Monday, on the 19th of Iyar. May their neshamas be elevated in the merit of this year to incredible heights. Much bracha to the entire Trapp family and everything, begashmias in the material, and beruchnis and in the spiritual. And last but not least, one last dedication by Rivka Perry, and this is in honor of her son's birthday on Lag BaOmer, Noach ben Rivka Chana. May he have a shnas bracha natzlach, an amazing good year. What a special birthday, the Hilula of Rashbi. May the light of Reb Shimon shine upon him and upon all of us. May we have an incredible Lag BaOmer and all the inspiration. May we all celebrate, not on Pico Boulevard, but we should all celebrate with Reb Shimon Bar Yochai in the Beis HaMikdash already on this Matzah Shabbos, on this Sunday. Thanks to all those who dedicated. This week's parasha is Parshas Bichu Koisai. Now, in the parasha that we read, the Torah begins with promising us, Hashem says, if you will listen to my mitzvahs, if you will observe my commandments, in Bichu Koisai Teilechu, if in my statutes you will go, that's mitzvoisai tishmoiru, and my mitzvahs you will observe, vasisa maisim, and you will do them. Basically, you will be a good Jew. You will follow my rules, and as Rashi explains, Bichu Koisai Teilechu doesn't only mean to do the mitzvahs or to follow the laws, it means to toil in Torah. If you will toil in Torah, and with the condition that your exertion and your toil is for the purpose of the fulfillment of the mitzvahs, you're not just learning because you enjoy learning, but you're learning with the intention that what you're learning, you're going to implement in your life to fulfill the mitzvahs, and you will do them, then Hashem goes ahead and he promises us a whole bunch of wonderful blessings. He begins in verse number 4, which is the second pasuk, the parasha begins in pasuk Gimel, in verse 3, and this is verse 4, the second pasuk, V'nasati yishmeichem bi'itam, I will give you rains in the right time. That means Hashem will give us rain, but not just will he give us rain, but he will make sure the rain is going to come down in a time when it won't disturb people from their Sunday afternoon plans. The rain is going to come at the proper time. V'nasna ha'aretz yivula, and the earth is going to give forth its produce. And v'eitz ha'sada, and the trees of the field, yitin piryoi, will give their fruits. The hisig lachem daish, and the threshing time is going to be so busy, there's going to be so much grain to thresh, that it's going to keep you busy as butzir until the time of the grape harvest. Ubatzer, and the grape harvest, Yasi Gazara, is going to keep you so busy because there's going to be so many grapes to harvest. You're going to be busy until the time of the sowing of the grains. The Chaltem, in other words, there will be such an abundance of vegetation, of divine blessings. The Chaltem Lachmechem, you will eat your breads, Lasaiva, to satiation, which means, as Rashi explains, that God is going to give a special blessing to the food, that we will feel satiated, and we won't have to overeat. The Yishavtem Lovetach Ba'artzechem, and you will live securely in your land. There won't be any fear of any war, any enemy, everything will be wonderful. And the pasuk continues that Hashem is going to give peace in the land. You're going to lay down at night and you're not going to tremble. And Hashem is going to remove wild beasts from the world, or he's going to neutralize them that they're not going to be dangerous anymore. The cherev leisarva ba'artzechem, and an army won't even pass through your country. Not let alone no one will come fight you, but there won't even be any passing of any army or military will not come close. And then you will chase your enemies. And the blessings go on and on, telling us all the wonderful things that God is going to give us if we follow his mitzvahs and if we truly devote ourselves to the fulfillment of what Hashem has sent us into this world to do. Now, the Toras Kahanim, which is a medrash on Parshas, on Sefer Vayikra, the Toras Kahanim says like this, that these promises, when were they fulfilled? When will they be fulfilled? Okay, God says, anytime you'll do my mitzvahs, I will keep these promises. But then there is The Medrash says this is particularly referring to the Messianic age, the time of Mashiach. As it says, I will v'nasna ha'aretz yavula, the earth will give forth what its produce. It means till now the earth has never really produced like it can produce. When Mashiach is going to come, the earth is going to give forth its entire potency, its a full power. And you're going to see what? Lo kederech she'oisa achshav, not like it's doing now. El kederech she'oisa b'mei adam erishon, like the world was when it was brand new, before man came and messed up the system, messed up nature. But initially when God created it, the earth was very, very powerful. That what? What was so special? So the Keteres Kahanim continues. And how do we know that the earth is going to give forth Nizreis, you're going to plant it, V'oisa peres ben yoima, and that very same day it's going to produce? So today we plant, and a few months later is when it grows out. When Mashiach is going to come, and this is the way it was when God created the world initially, you plant, and instantly it will grow out. The very same day, you come back 2 hours later, and it's there. The fruit, the grains are finished. Talmud Loimar, the verse says, Zecher asal nifli oisav, a remembrance he did to his wonders. Now he will bring back the wonders. We will remember the wonders of the old days, of how it was by the days of Adam. And it brings it from another verse, Tachi Aretz Desha Esav, that the earth produced on the first day, on Tuesday, when God created vegetation, everything came out finished. The world produced immediately. On the day that it was sown, and that very day it's going to produce. Then that's one blessing. It's going to be when Mashiach comes. But it's not only the vegetation. It's not only the grains or vegetables, tomatoes and whatever. It's not only that. It's also fruit trees, which is even a bigger novelty. Because we understand that a tree, when you plant it, it takes much longer for the tree to grow. Because a tree has to come out and has to grow to its full maturity. And then it starts producing fruit. No, but that's not the way it's going to be when Mashiach comes. The Eitz HaSada Yitin Pirioi. The tree of the field is going to give its fruits. Loi Kederech Shu Oisa Achshav. Not like it's doing now. El Kederech Shu Asasa B'mei Adam Arishan. Like it did in the days of Adam and Adam when God created the world. Boi B'yoyim Shehu Natua. On the day that it was planted. Boi B'yoyim Oisa Peirois. On that very same day it's going to produce fruits. So you plant an orange seed, a few hours later you have a full grown tree with full of oranges. And this is what the Torah says is going to be. Literally, the Medrash tells us this is the way the world is going to be when Mashiach will come. Menayin, sha'etz asad liyos nechal. How do we know that the fruits, that the trees themselves are going to be edible? Shanet Hamad Loimar, eitz pri. The fruit and the eitz itself, not a fruit tree, but the tree itself is fruity, has the fruit flavor. If it's only coming to say that it's a fruit tree and it's not a barren tree, it says already another word. It says in the pasuk it makes fruits. Why does it say eitz peri? Elama pri nechal, afa eitz nechal. Just like fruit is edible, the trees themselves will be edible. And we're not going to be afraid for what? As we say, that people are going to chop down all the trees because they're going to eat the bark. They're going to eat the trees itself. Because even if they do so, no problem. If they replant it the next day, it doesn't take any time to replenish, because everything, as we just learned earlier, will grow instantly. So therefore, there is no problem with people eating the trees. And how do we know that all barren trees, that today most of the trees in the world do not give fruit? How do we know that even barren trees are going to give fruits? Talmud Loima, the Eitz HaSada Yitin Piryoi, the tree of the field will give its fruits. That means the regular, ordinary field trees, not the trees in the groves, not the trees in the vineyards, but all the trees in the field, the regular trees, every tree will give fruit. Can you imagine how many new fruits we're going to have? But that we don't, doesn't say it's going to give the same fruits. I mean, new types of fruit that we don't even know of. All the unbelievable types of fruits that Hashem is going to create after Mashiach comes, because everything, all trees are going to give fruit. This is wonderful. Now, okay, it's the days of Mashiach. We've always been dreaming about Mashiach, but it used to be a fantasy. It used to be something that is going to be in a very, very long time. But now, there's something to be excited about, it because we are standing literally at the threshold of redemption. We're standing right over here. A few weeks ago, I read a fascinating piece of the Zohar, where the Zohar describes a story like this. The Zohar says that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, Lag BaOmer, were celebrating, and Lag BaOmer is connected, aside from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's teacher, Rabbi Akiva, because his students passed away, and this day they stopped. So Rabbi Akiva was walking with his teacher, Rabbi Eliezer, and they were walking on the road, and Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Eliezer, "My master, why was the human being created last? Hashem created everything, and he left the human being to be the last creation." And Rabbi Eliezer said to him, "Because God didn't want the human being to be a big shot, to walk around and tell all other creatures, I helped God in creating you. I was involved in making, I'm a whole scientist, and I can figure out how to make things, and I helped Hashem in producing the monkeys. I helped Hashem in producing the birds, and therefore you should serve me as you serve Hashem." So in order to avoid that, God saved, let all creatures open their eyes and see that the human being is not around yet, and then later they all watched and witnessed how God created the human, and the human didn't participate at all in creation. So you will not be able to deceive anyone. That was the answer Rabbi Eliezer gave to Rabbi Akiva. Then they continued walking. Suddenly Rabbi Eliezer stopped, put his hands over his face, and he broke down sobbing. Rabbi Eliezer, imagine this, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva on the road, and Rabbi Eliezer stops and he's sobbing in the middle of the road. So Rabbi Akiva looks to his Rebbe and he waits till he calms down and he says, "Rebbe, what happened?" So he said, "I had a vision. Right now I had a vision. Pertaining to the question you asked, why the human being was only created on the sixth day of creation. Because when God created the world, God created the world in 6 days. Every day resembles a millennium. Stands for a millennium. We discussed it this year in Parshas Bereishis, how each day is equivalent to a millennium. So there's 1,000 years. Friday, the sixth day when God created a human being, it, besides for meaning Adam, it also means the ultimate human being that is going to be created, that is going to come to the world in the sixth millennium. And that is Mashiach, that is going to come and bring redemption to the world in the sixth millennium. That means between the year 5,000 and the year 6,000. And he says, not in the end, not in the end. These are the words of the Zohar. And not in the end of the sixth millennium. Well, 3/4 of it passed already. 700 and over 700, and we're holding 775 passed, 74 passed already. But Rabbi Eliezer says, and not at the end. And he says, because his dominion, the dominion of the ultimate human being, the greatest human being ever to live, is going to be in the sixth millennium. God has not given him permission to rule earlier. It's in the sixth millennium, that's the period in which he will rule the world. And then Rabbi Eliezer said, that's why I was crying, because who can wait so long? See, he saw that way back then, 1900 years ago, whatever Rabbi Eliezer lived, 1800 years ago. And he saw that there was such a long time until this will happen. But now we're holding at the very end. So when we read about Mashiach, these things are far more exciting. So we're reading, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be an incredible transformation in the world, in that the earth is going to finally produce. There's other midrashic elements that say that even the taste of fruit today is a beer, nothing. It's a faint shadow. Since Adam sinned, all the taste of food went out. We haven't really tasted an apple ever. It's nothing. and compared to what fruit once was. When Mashiach is going to come, all the fruit, the taste of fruit will come back. The sun and the moon will shine with brightness way more than we know it today. And human beings' face will radiate with a light. The human's face will radiate with an incredible light. So these are things that it says about Mashiach. Now there's another two interesting statements said by the sages, not in the same Torah as Kahanim, in Masechtas Ksubot. Tractate Ksubis, the Gemara tells us that when Mashiach comes, the earth is going to produce delicacies. I don't know if that means danishes and cupcakes. But the earth is going to give forth finished delicacies. The earth and clean milas and silk clothing is going to be produced by the earth. And it says wheat, Gemara over there, wheat, stalks of wheat are going to grow so tall, they're going to be like palm trees. Just wheat. And the kernels of the wheat, which we make the flour from, are going to be as big as the kidneys of a large ox. Now, I decided to look that up. I Googled it. I wrote kidney of a large ox, and I got a picture. Pretty massive. Look it up. It's a big thing like this. And the wheat kernels are going to be like two, like the kidneys of a large ox. Why the sages picked that, I don't know. But that's the size of the wheat. So these are incredible things that say about the bounty and the blessing that is going to fill the world after Mashiach comes. The question that we have tonight is, the time of Mashiach is characterized by Maimonides, by the Rambam, as a time when the world is going to be filled with divine knowledge. And the Jewish people are not going to be busy with anything else but pursuing wisdom. Not only the Jewish people. The involvement of all people. People will not follow sports. People are not going to follow the stock market or the this or the that. That people are so involved. Everybody's going to be in a hot pursuit after godliness, after knowledge. That's going to be the obsession of mankind. Knowledge to know Hashem. And that's going to be all of humanity. And especially the Jewish people. So then, and Rambam says that the Jews are going to attain very high levels of wisdom after Mashiach comes. And he continues and he says, V'chol ha'madanim, and all delicious things, all delicacies and all delights, mitsuyim, they're going to be as available as dust, as earth. But the commentaries explain, it doesn't only mean it's going to be as accessible as dust is, it's going to be considered as dust. It's going to be meaningless. Just like we have no obsession, we have no excitement about dust, and to go and pick up and lick the dust from time to time. It's yucky to us. It doesn't mean anything to us. After Mashiach comes, what is now such an obsession, what we're so excited about, all the delicacy, all the delicious things, all the material delights, and are going to be meaningless. So here's the question. Now in our world, when we would appreciate all these things, we don't have them. We have. Thank God, the Eibishter blesses the world with pretty much blessings, but nothing compared. When Mashiach comes, when no one is going to care about them, that's when they're going to be in abundance. But the main question over here is not why did God do that? That's the time when the world will be filled with divine blessing as a result of all of our Torah and mitzvah observance. But the primary question over here is, why do the sages talk about that? Why do the sages make a whole to-do about all these material blessings when these things will be totally meaningless? No one is going to care about the big kidney size, ox kidney, cow kidney size wheat kernels. It's going to be meaningless. Today you can imagine. You think about it. The kind of flour it produces. Can you imagine cinnamon buns made out of that? With the good vanilla frosting on the top? Or delicious rolls. So we understand. But when days of Mashiach, when these things are not important, when no one cares about it. So why are the sages busy seeming to entice us and to talk about Mashiach, about all these physical things, when that's not what it is all about? Now, similar to that question is the question of the Mefarshim ask in Parshas, in our Parsha, even if we do not assume that this is talking about the Messianic age, the days of Mashiach, when the Torah promises blessings, which some commentators say that this occurred also in the days of King Solomon, when Jews were living in Eretz Yisrael, and it just says Ishtachas Gafne, everybody was under their vineyard. Ishtachas Tanase, they were under their fig trees. They had an abundance. The Jews were very wealthy at that time. So the question is, why does the Torah promise for the observance of mitzvahs such material physical blessings? Why doesn't the Torah talk to us about the lights of the neshama? And after all, you know, it is a tradition. We all believe, and that has been handed down. And even though the Torah didn't talk about it, it has been passed on in mainstream Judaism to all Jewish people that there is an afterlife, and that the neshama has all kinds of pleasure, and we understand that it's spiritual pleasure. But the Chumash itself doesn't talk about it, about the spiritual pleasures of the soul and of the afterlife. So the question is, why? I mean, we understand that the spiritual pleasures are far deeper and far more powerful and much richer and far more sensational than the physical delights and the physical pleasures. The body is very limited, very small, and even the body experiencing the highest, deepest pleasure and delight is nothing compared to the capability of a soul that is divested from a body, because the body, the soul, when it comes into a body, the voltage of the soul has to be turned down. All of its experiences are severely reduced. The experiences of a neshama in a body, everything, happiness, sadness, pain, joy, delight, pleasure, everything is minimal, because the body can only handle so much. It's physical. If you give it too much, the body would break. It's too, like you put a light bulb and you put too much voltage, it will break the light bulb, so to the body would burst. So God has to minimize the experiences of the soul when it is in a body. And we understand that. Then all the experiences are much richer. So if the Torah wants to talk about reward, why? Why do we talk about such physical reward instead of speaking about spiritual reward? So this is a question that is asked by the commentators. The Abar Benel, Rabbi Yitzchak Abarbanel, in his commentary to the Chumash on this week's Parsha, asks this question, and he provides seven answers given by the various different great sages and great commentators on the Chumash. Each one, he explains the answer of why the Torah speaks so physical, about physical reward. The Kli Yakar, which is one of the commentators printed in the common Chumash called Mikra'is Gedolos. So the Kli Yakar mentions all the seven answers given by the Abarbanel, and he shortens them, and he says, gives them over in brief, and I want to go through all those seven answers because each one of them is very special. So the Kli Yakar says like this, reason number one, why the Torah is so physical in its reward and not speaking about hardly any spiritual reward. There is a little bit. At the end, I mean, nothing about the afterlife, but it does talk about the divine presence living amongst us. As the Pasuk says, all the way in the end, V'salachti b'sochacham, I will walk amongst you, and V'yisi lochem l'alekim, and I will be to you as a God. And I'm sorry, the Pasuk before that, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'nasati mishkoini b'sochacham, I will give my dwelling amongst you. V'leisigal nafshi eschem, and my, the Shekhinah will not abhor you. I will live amongst you. I will dwell amongst you. You'll all be prophets in a sense, because we will all be taken by the divine spirit, by Hashem dwelling inside of you. So there is some mention of spiritual kind of a blessing, but very minimal in compared to all the blessings we had mentioned earlier that the Torah goes on at the beginning of the parasha, which are about the threshing being so busy until the grape harvest. And so his answer that he gives, again, is seven answers. First, he brings the pirish, the Kli Yakar brings the pirish, again, quoting the Abarbanel, he brings the pirish of the Rambam. And he says that these blessings and all the blessings that are mentioned in this week's parasha are not reward. This is not the reward. It's not meant to be a reward. The Torah is not promising us our reward. It's only that what the Torah is saying is like this. When you will diligently perform my mitzvahs, you will study Torah and do mitzvahs, Hashem says, I will help you in your pursuit to be able to learn more Torah and to do more mitzvahs so you don't have anything disturbing you. Now, we're blocked. We have all kinds of interferences from the physical, our bodies and our bodies' needs and the lack of them, which many times a person can't study Torah when they're ill, when we have to pay the bills. We spend so much time just trying to crank out a living. So that takes away from our time. It takes away from our mental energy. It drains us. We're full of stress and anxiety. We don't have the peace, the tranquility that is necessary. When Mashiach comes, when all war and all strife and all animosity and all competition, and the world will, and there won't be any hunger in the world, and there won't be any more any illness in the world. So at that time, we're going to be able to study Torah and learn and do mitzvahs to our heart's desire. And our appetite is going to be very big. So we're just going to accumulate a lot of Torah and a lot of mitzvahs. And that will lead us to the ultimate reward, which is connection to Hashem, which happens after Mashiach, which is the time of the spiritual connection. But the Torah doesn't talk about that. The Torah is only saying, if you will follow my mitzvahs, I will make life easier for you to assist you in your observance of mitzvahs. But this is not the final destination, and this is not your reward. That's Rambam's explanation. First explanation. Second explanation, the second explanation is from the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra in Parshas Hazinu. He says like this: the reason why the Torah is so physical in its reward, not spiritual, is because the Torah is speaking to the masses. And most people do not have a feeling, an excitement about spirituality, about more abstract, mystical things. And therefore, if the Torah was to go ahead and promise an afterlife and the experiences of the soul, it wouldn't be concrete, it wouldn't be real enough, and therefore it wouldn't motivate the masses. So the Torah mainly has to dumb down the message to speak about physical blessings and the like, in order to get simple people, people that are immature, people that are still childish, to be able to follow and get excited about Torah, about mitzvahs. That's why the Torah promises physical reward, and the reason why Torah should say both, he says, Torah ala roiv tedaber. The Torah speaks about most people. And most people are not educated and don't have that sensitivity to appreciate the spiritual blessings. So that's why we speak only of the physical. That's the second reason. The third reason the Kli Yakar gives for, again, the Barbanel, he brings this Pirish from Nachmanides, from the Ramban. And he says like this: the Torah is only speaking about supernatural miracles, which means when God does things that are against nature in order to reward us. For instance, if rain comes when we observe the Torah, that is not necessarily natural, because there are certain systems, weather systems, in which God set up the world, and rain is dependent on all these various different factors that a meteorologist will tell you which is conducive to make it a rainy season or a non-rainy season. Here God says that if you keep my mitzvahs, then it's going to rain, and if you don't keep my mitzvahs, it's not going to rain, it's going to be a drought. So that God is interfering with nature, that's what the Torah is talking about. But the spiritual experience of the soul in the afterlife, that's not a miracle. He says that's nature. It's natural that the soul, after 120, will go back to its source. God is the source of the neshama. So the soul returns back to its source. That's teva. That's nature. So the Torah doesn't have to speak about it, because that's a given. What the Torah has to tell us are miracles that are unnatural. And that are all the things that are mentioned in the Chumash. That's a third explanation by the Ramban. A fourth explanation. This one is by, he brings it from the Kuzari, in which the explanation is given as this: that these rewards are not only given to motivate us to learn Torah and do mitzvahs, but they're also coming to demonstrate God's involvement and God's authority over the world. That Hashem is not distant, removed, or uninvolved, like the people and many people still believe that if there is a God, He's not that involved. So therefore, this comes to demonstrate Hashem's involvement. And therefore, if you give me promises and promise all kinds of delights of what's going to happen in the afterlife, we have no scientific data. We have nothing to measure that. You can make promises, but that would not be a proof to the existence of God and God's involvement in the world. But when you see that those who observe Torah are doing really well and those that violate the Torah are not doing that well, that's a demonstration of God being involved in our lives and in this world. Therefore the Kuzari was a king of the Kuzarim. Whether he was really a king of Kuzarim or if it was just written in that sense, but that's a question on its own. We once had classes by Rabbi Karupkin, phenomenal, about the Kuzari. So over there, the Kuzari, who is the king, he invited three different scholars from the three main religions. And he's interviewing them and discussing religion with them and faith and theology with them. And in his discussion, he asked the question. He turns to the Jewish sage, to the Jewish scholar, and he says, the other religions are promising much greater promises than the Jewish religion seems to be promises. The promise of heaven and the promises that the Torah is given doesn't seem to be as significant. So he says to him this answer. He says, all their promises are only in the afterlife. They haven't made any promises about life down here because they can't provide. And says the Torah is promising blessings for a person in the here and in the now. And then the Kuzari, this is the answer that the sage gives, and the Kuzari interjects, and he says, yeah, that's why you find that all these people that are very big believers in the afterlife, with all the blessings that are going to be, how many of them are really willing to exit life immediately now to go into the afterlife experience? They'd rather stay alive in this world because this is something that they see and they know. Now, the question obviously on this whole explanation is, we don't always see that people that are doing the mitzvahs are doing so well, and people that are not doing the mitzvahs, that's the age-old question as well. Like, how does that fit with everything that we learn over here in the Torah, that if you do mitzvahs and if you're a good Jew, everything will be wonderful and nice and dandy, which we don't always find, especially we see so many times people that are such tzaddikim, such wonderful people, and they're having very, very, very difficult illness, and chas v'shalom, chas Hashem yishmerenu, no one should have that. But, so that's a question. But this is generally the explanation that he gives. That's why the Torah doesn't speak about the blessings, because they would not prove anything to the skeptic like these other blessings. That's answer number four. Answer number five that he gives, why the Torah speaks only of the material and the Torah does not speak of the spiritual. So his fifth answer is, that being that the Jewish people just came from a pagan lifestyle, they were serving, and in those days you had all the different gods, and the other gods promised to their constituents, to their members, all kinds of material blessings. That in the ancient gods, they promised that if you serve this one, you will have, you will have love, and if you serve this one, you will find this and find that. So therefore, this was just like Hashem's. In order for Hashem, so to speak, kiviyachol, chas v'shalom, not to compare, that's why I'm saying kiviyachol, lahavdil alef hadolos, 1,000 times. But in order for Hashem to stay within the competition, so this is the marketing thing, you have to promise what the others are promising. If they're making those promises of material blessings, Hashem has to promise that. But spiritual blessings, the others can't offer. Since the others can't offer any spiritual blessings, the Eibishter, Hashem, and his Torah doesn't have to make an argument to promise these things, because this was never, what Hashem is answering is to those promises that the other gods have made, or the priests from the other religions, or other gods and the idols, that Hashem says, I will provide all these things that they're promising to you. That's another answer. Then there is the sixth answer. The sixth answer that he gives is, very interesting answer, the reason why the Torah speaks only of the physical blessings and not the spiritual blessings are because the Torah, not about the afterlife, because the Torah gives us the spiritual blessings even in this life. You don't need the afterlife. Meaning that whenever they speak about heaven and other religions, it's only an experience. It's a spiritual experience that comes after a person leaves this world. But Hashem promises, V'nasati mishkani b'seichechem, I will give my dwelling amongst you. You will have prophets. You will have people that will be enlightened with great spiritual enlightenment, like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, like the holy Baal Shem Tov, like the sages, the Tanoim, like the prophets. So then you can derive and say, if when the soul is in the body, as part of living a Torah life and remaining connected to the Torah in a very deep way, you can experience divinity, God's light, of course, once the soul leaves the body. So really, it is stated in this that the Torah says this week in the parasha, that I will dwell amongst you. From there, we can derive the ultimate experiences of the afterlife. And finally, answer number seven that the Kli Yakar brings from the Abarbanel is that the physical blessings is something you can give wholesale. It's something that everybody gets equally. If you learn my Torah and you do my mitzvahs, God promises I'll give you rain, I'll give you abundance, I'll give you peace in the land. That's something that can be given to the masses. But the spiritual reward to a neshama, to a soul, is something very individualized. Every neshama has a completely different experience. And for that reason, the Torah couldn't talk about it. Because the Torah is not going to go ahead and speak to each person individual. The Torah speaks to the people. And so the physical blessings is something you can address everybody as a community. But this would need a personal, to be delivered to each person individually. That's why the Torah doesn't talk about it. These are seven answers given by the Abarbanel. Now, in general, they're divided into two types. Rambam, that says that the Torah is not at all speaking about reward. This is not reward. This is only enabling us to be able to be good Jews so that later we will receive the reward. And the other answer is that we are speaking about reward, but the specific reason why the Torah chose to speak about the physical reward and not about the spiritual reward. The question, however, over here that still remains is that we know there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos where the Mishnah tells us, Al tihi ka'avadim, just in Perek, we just learned it the first week of Pirkei Avos. I think it's the second Mishnah, or the third Mishnah. Al tihi ka'avadim, do not be like servants, ha'misham shem es harav, that serve their master on manas l'kabel paras in order to receive reward. Havei ka'avadim, but rather you should be like servants who serve their master, shaloi al manas l'kabel paras, not to receive a reward. So if we're not, our intentions in our service to Hashem has to be altruistically, and not for a reward. So then why are we even talking about reward? Why does the Torah speak about if this is reward? According to the Rambam, it's not a question because it's not reward. Hashem is saying, I'm going to assist you and help you so that I'm going to remove all the interferences and everything that's going to get in the way. But according to all the other opinions is that this is reward. Why would the Torah be speaking of reward when the Torah does not want us to serve Him based on a reward? And the answer to that would be that what? That the Torah knows that, of course, the ultimate and the desirable thing is to serve Hashem without a reward, just for simple service. But the Torah knows that most people are not at that level, as we mentioned earlier about the type of reward. But the very notion of reward, to be able to transcend self-interests and do something like the Rambam says, Oysa Esa Emes, to do the truth because it's true. The Rambam says that's the Madrega of Avram Avinu. That's Avram's greatness. That's what Avram attained. And the Rambam himself tells us that when we educate children to learn Torah and to do mitzvahs, we're supposed to give them rewards. We're supposed to give them candy, and we're supposed to give them any kind of reward that will get them motivated to do so. Because once you get people accustomed to live in this way, eventually they will reach a point where they won't need the reward. So that's the reason why the Torah tells us the reward. And again, once we need to speak of reward for the people that would not be able to, people who haven't had the maturity and the understanding that serving God itself is the greatest reward, for those who had not had that ability to move past it, for them, we also understand why the Torah has to speak so physical. Because these very people don't really have much appreciation, as we mentioned earlier from the Eben Ezra, in the spiritual, and therefore we have to talk about the physical. This would be the answer. This can also then explain why in the days of Mashiach, we began the class with the question, why when Mashiach comes, the sages elaborate about all the physical bounty and the blessings that are going to be after Mashiach comes in such description about all the details of the magnificent wonders that are going to happen of having the things, the fruit grow instantly, the trees grow immediately, the size of the fruit and the taste of it, how delicious it's going to be. Why is the Torah speaking of it after Mashiach comes when people will be on a high level? And the answer is very simple. When Mashiach comes, Mashiach is not going to snap his fingers and all the people are going to grow up instantly. Mashiach is going to introduce, he's going to open up our eyes. But people are still going to be people. And they're going to have to gradually grow into the new understanding. People are going to move much faster. But people who did not have do any studying of anything abstract or anything mystical or anything godly, and godliness is not a reality in their life, it's going to take a while till the people will start understanding and appreciating it. And therefore, until that time will come, we need the motivation, even after Mashiach comes, it's needed the motivation of all the material and physical blessings, because to motivate people, even post-Mashiach, because it's not going to be, and the reason is simple. If Mashiach snaps his finger and suddenly we're all angels in heaven, then it's not true to who we are. Then we're going to lose ourselves. We're not going to be us anymore. And Hashem doesn't want that. Hashem wants you to be you. The good thing and the more appropriate thing to do is to start learning now and to start refining ourselves to spiritual ideas now when we're still in Golus, so we have a head start. When Mashiach comes, we don't have to go through the elementary progression of growth. We will be already in a place where we can, and Mashiach can talk to us already. He can talk already something deeper, something higher, and our motivation can be the spiritual. But not everybody's going to be there. And or possible, being that it's not only because Mashiach, but also now, in our days, we have a mitzvah to believe in the coming of Mashiach. And not only to believe in the Mashiach, but we have a mitzvah to await His coming. The Rambam says it's a mitzvah, it's an absolute mitzvah, it's a chiyuv, it's an obligation, that we await for Mashiach, and waiting means when you're waiting impatiently. Now, being that today's days, we're not yet in the Mashiach enlightened state, we can't wait for something if we don't appreciate that it's going to be something good. So therefore, the sages had to tell us about the physical bliss and the physical material blessings so that even an average person can wait for Mashiach with all his heart and all his soul because it's going to be good, because it's going to be wonderful. That would be the explanation. So that's the explanation of Parshas Bechukosai. That is also the explanation about all these material blessings that are promised when Mashiach will come. The problem, however, is a simple problem. According to that, an educated, refined, grown-up person, a person that has matured already, has no inspiration learning Parshas Bechukosai. This totally doesn't speak to him. There's no message for him in this week's parsha. Because this is a person who has an appreciation for the true delights that are going to be available when Mashiach comes. Like King David says, Shifti beveis Hashem, I can sit in the house of Hashem, kol yemechai, all the days of my life, lachsuiz benoyam Hashem, to gaze at the pleasantness, at the delight of God. So people that are tzaddikim, people that are on a higher caliber, people that are refined, people that have reached maturity already in the time of exile, what's with those people? What is the parsha speaking of to them? You'll say, well, the Torah speaks to most. So what is a person like that supposed to do? Skip Parshas Bechukosai? We go straight from Bahar and he's reading already Bamidbar because this whole parsha doesn't speak to him. Both the blessings and the curses, they're all in the physical. You can answer and say, we once learned that every pasuk, every physical blessing also has a spiritual interpretation. And therefore, it's not only the physical blessing, it's the spiritual thing. That's true, but we also know, Ein mikra yotze midei pshutai, that the Chumash is never allowed to be taken out from its literal meaning. Unless the sages tell us that we have to take it out from its literal meaning. But if not, we keep things in the literal meaning. Which means that the simple pshat of Parshas Bechukosai is irrelevant to a more refined human being. And we can't say so. We have to say that there is a message for everybody in this week's parsha. To add to the question, to further illustrate it, to further develop this, the question that we're asking over here, and that is, who are we speaking to? What type of Jew are we talking to? Does Hashem make these promises? He makes the promises not to an ordinary person, simple person. We said earlier when the Torah says, "In b'chukosai telechu," if in my statutes you will go, it doesn't just mean doing mitzvahs, it means toiling in Torah, which means learning Torah with all your heart and all your soul and exerting yourself in the study of Torah. That's when God makes His promises. That's when I'm going to give you all these things. Meaning, go beyond the measure. Go beyond your obligation. Which means a person whose obsession is Torah. So obviously you would expect that a person like that is a little bit more refined, that has a higher appreciation than telling him that he's going to have lots of food. And that's what he's waiting for Mashiach. Or these are the blessings that you're speaking to him in order to entice him. It doesn't seem like this would mean anything to him. Not only that, but Rashi says, not only, because sometimes you have a person who might be coarse, but they enjoy the intellectual pursuit of knowledge. But in general, they could be a coarse human being and unrefined. Rashi says clearly that what type of bechukosai telecha, what kind of exertion in Torah? One that is directed to serving Hashem, which means you're learning Torah with the condition that you're going to do the mitzvahs. Which means the person is a very observant and also a very learned person, a scholar and a very pious human being. And to him we are saying, to him or to her, what are we saying? Learn Torah, do mitzvahs, and Hashem will provide these material blessings. Doesn't seem to be the right message. One step deeper in the question. Why does the Torah use the words in bechukosai? If in my laws you will go, but chukosai means in the particular kind of Torah. It means particular kind of mitzvahs that are laws of God that beyond reason. But the Torah uses the word chukosai. The Hasidic masters teach us that there is something particular that the Torah is trying to emphasize in the manner in which we have to study Torah and do mitzvahs. That it's supposed to be in a manner of chukaisai. What does chukaisai mean? Chukaisai comes from the word chakika. Chakika means engraving. And Hashem is saying, if your Yiddishkeit is engraved in you, there's two ways in which we can write knowledge, write something down. One of them is you put ink onto a paper. You write with a pen or a pencil, chalk or whatever. That's erasable. And even if you don't erase it, even if you don't erase it, it's still separable because they're two separate things. There's ink and there is a canvas, there is a paper, and the ink is attached to it. There are two things that are attached together. It's possible for us to scratch it off to separate it. When you carve something out in a stone, when it's etched in stone, then the words and the thing that it's etched on are one entity, one and the same. When God gave us the Torah, He gave us a Sefer Torah with ink on parchment, but that's not the original Torah. The Ten Commandments were given to Moshe engraved, and so thoroughly engraved that the engravement went through and through from side to side, which means there's nothing else but the letters. The letters are the stone, and the stone is the letters. Total one. And what does that represent? And what does that teach us? That the true ideal way that a Jew is supposed to learn Torah and do mitzvahs is he has to feel his Yiddishkeit is who he is. This is who I am. This is my being. Shabbos is not a nice thing. Yom Tov, tefillin is not just a nice thing to do. It's a time. It's a great opportunity for spiritual connection. Or any other mitzvah or kashrus refines my soul. So it's a good way of life. This is my essence. I have no other identity. Generally, when you talk to a person, you say, you know, who are you? They'll just say all kinds of things about himself. I'm so-and-so, right? This is my, I'm a U.S. citizen. I'm an American. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a father. I'm a brother. We have all kinds of identities that describe who we are. Happens to be that one of the things I do, I happen to be Jewish. Like Jewish is like one of the things, and well, I'm observant. I'm Orthodox. Right? It's like one of the labels that we have. No, that's not what it is. The first and foremost, I'm a Jew. My life is one thing, is the expression of godliness in this world through His Torah and through His mitzvahs. That's my identity. Three times a day I pray, not because I like to pray, not because it's nice, not because it's, not even because I'm obligated. It's because I cannot not pray. And that's why you see sometimes when a person is on that level, if there's no minyan or they can't daven mincha, they go crazy. Literally OCD, totally nuts. Say, relax. No, I can't relax. Why? Because this not being able to do a mitzvah is who they are. There's no me left. There's no me without the mitzvah. And that's the meaning of Imbuchu Kaisai. So then the question is, for a person whose Yiddishkeit is so deep, so engraved, that that's his entire being, that you don't need a motivation why to do it. I cannot not do it. So why are you talking about any reward is meaningless? We know the story with the Baal Shem Tov, that the Baal Shem Tov was once notified. It's interesting, they say the story about the Baal Shem Tov, they say the story about the Vilna Goyen. That one time they were notified from heaven that they, because of something that they did, they lost the entire reward. Their olam haba gone. God is upset at them. Everything has been taken away from them. And they were very happy. They were so happy, like they, and they explained that the reason why he's so happy is because till now there was at least a question in the back of his mind that everything that he does is because of the reward that he will get. But now we can serve Hashem just because he wants to give a pleasure to Hashem. That's when your Yiddishkeit is who you are. It's your essence. And there's no external motivation to do so. So if people that are on the level of Bichukaisai, we're saying that what? We're giving them, we're speaking of such material physical blessings. It doesn't seem right. So here is a very profound and incredible answer by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, which is so amazing and such an eye-opener about what it means, Judaism and Yiddishkeit. And that is as follows. Torah, we say about the Torah, ki heim chayenu. Torah is our life. The orech yomenu. This is the longevity. This is our life. This is what our life is about. Ki heim chayenu v'orech yomenu. And it doesn't mean that Torah leads us to life. that as a result of the performance, learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, we will have life, but that Torah itself is our oxygen. Torah itself is our life. Like the famous story of Rabbi Akiva, when he was teaching Torah during the time when the Romans had forbidden the study of Torah with the punishable by death, and Rabbi Akiva met, I forgot the name of the fellow, the Gemara tells a story, in which the person saw Rabbi Akiva studying, and he said, "What are you doing? It's crazy. You're endangering your life, your life of the students and everyone. How can you do this?" And Rabbi Akiva told him the story of the fox. When the fox comes to the fish at the end of the lake, and the fox is looking at the fish, and the fox wants lunch. So, but it knows he's trying to grab a fish, but it can't get the fish. The fish are keeping a little bit away from the river bank or from the end of the lake. So the fox calls out to the fish and he says, "Hey, you know, the fishermen are standing over there and they're throwing in their net. They're throwing in their to catch the fish." He says, "If you think that's you're in danger, if you're in the water, why don't you come out over here? Over here, no one is going to fish for you over here. You'll be fine." So the fish say, "Yeah, chacham what you are." He says, "If in the place of our life, which is the water, even there we're in danger." Because water is our life. And so we were in danger, even in the water. If you take us out of our life, finished. If we have our life source, we're gone in an instant. Rabbi Akiva was saying, it's true that we're living in a hostile environment. That until Mashiach comes, Jews can be in danger even when we're learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, doing the godly thing, because of all the concealments and the obscurity of Hashem. It's possible that we're in danger when we're learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. But when we stop learning Torah and stop doing mitzvahs, we're finished, kaputo, we're gone instantly. Because Torah is our life. So if that's the case, when we look at life, what do we see about life? We're alive, right? We all look at ourselves, we're alive. We have life in our body. Our body is alive. But the three parts to our body. There is the head, there is the torso, the middle part of the body, and then there is the legs. All three of them are alive. But we know that life is experienced differently in each part of the body. In the head, you have intelligence. And that's where you do your math, and that's where you have an epiphany and an idea, and that's where you can sing a song or hear music and see and have your visual and all that, all taking vision and hearing and all that takes place in your head, in your brain. Then there is the main part of your body where you experience emotions, and also where your higher talents express itself. Art, it's all in the fingers and in the hand where you can do things which are more sophisticated. Then you have your legs. The legs have the most nether power of life. They move around. They can carry you from place to place. But we might say the weakest or the most unsophisticated element of the soul resides in the legs. But that's only when we're speaking of the individual powers of our soul. The individual experiences of life. But how about life itself? The fact that we're alive. Is our fingers more alive than our toes? Is there any more life than the fingers? Talent, yeah. But life. Life is equal. Life is experienced equal. Our toes and our eyes are equally alive. And the brain is equally alive. Because life is not divisible. Life is not break. You can't break it into pieces. A person's, the soul, your very being, your very soul is equal in the entire body. From head to toe. That's life. When God is the source of life, when Torah is the life of the human being, that life is present in the entire human experience from head to toe, from top to bottom, in the spiritual and the physical equally. If it's only in one part of you, means it's an expression of certain powers, but it's not life itself. The example we have within our own experiences, where we see that, is when a person is experiencing joy, happiness, for whatever reason, when you're happy. How do you know that you're happy? As opposed to there is a happy tingle inside of you. How do you know that the happiness has reached into the core of your being, of who you really are, and you're really happy? What's the demonstration? How do you see that? So when you hear good news, you know, you're learning something and you've been mystified by something for quite a long time. and then you finally found an answer, you're happy. And the rest of the day, you're in a good mood. How can someone see you're in a good mood? They talk to you. They hear in your conversation, you're not down, you're spirited, you might be humorous, you might be funny. You can see the person is happy. Yes, right? Maybe you're singing a little bit. Right? So you can see joy. How about when something magnificent, marvelous happens in your life? Something just unbelievable. You in a terrible trouble. And something just found out that your life was saved. Or something, you came out of a financial situation that was just ready to destroy you completely. Or you're celebrating your one and only child's wedding. And you're by the wedding. How does the joy express itself? That you're in a good mood. That you're open. That too. But the expression of the joy is going to be in the fact that you start jumping up and down. You're singing and you're dancing and you're clapping your hands and you're tapping your feet and you're leaping from your place with simcha, with joy. The entire body. You say, hold it, relax. What are you, a boar? What are you, a behemoth? What are you, a cow, a goat? You're a sophisticated human being. You're happy. When you're happy, sheer thoughts of wisdom. Write poetry. Express yourself. I can only write poetry and share thoughts of wisdom and ideas if it did not hit me in my core. This joy, I'm convincing myself I'm happy because of this, because of that. Yes, it affects certain parts of the person. But when the entire human being comes alive, when the joy permeates your very essence, then the simcha causes the vibrations to flow in the entire body, head and feet equally. There's no difference between one part and the other. And that's the ultimate demonstration if you're really happy. If it finds expression in the most physical and in the most earthy, mundane, external part of your life. Because then you see that it's your very life that is quaking and shaking. And that's why it's affecting your very essence of life is everywhere equally. It's not relegated to a certain part of your body or to a certain area of your experience. And therefore, when it comes to Torah, since Torah is life of the Jew, so it's not just the life of the soul, it's the life of my body as well. It's what gives me good health. It's what gives me everything. And therefore, the consequences of the observance of Torah, as a result of the mitzvah that we do, the blessings, which are not, which in Torah and mitzvahs, it's a direct derivative from the mitzvah. It's not like God says, if you do so, I'm going to give you another reward. The mitzvahs, the rewards of the Torah are direct outcome of the mitzvah. Since the mitzvah of Torah is life, the reward of Torah also is life itself, and it has to reveal itself and show itself and manifest in every aspect of life. Of course, it brings bliss and ecstasy to your soul, but it has to bring blessings in the body as well, that the physical environment around you is improved and gets better and better and better as a result of the Torah observance. The blessing is of life itself. Because Torah is not a detail in our life. Torah is life itself. And the reason for that is because Torah is one with God. And God is not a thing. Hashem is not a thing. Hashem is not physical. And Hashem is not spiritual. He's not super spiritual. God is reality. And He's reality of everything. He's the existence, the very beingness of everything. So if an Hashem from God's existence emerges everything. So if the Torah is the expression and the will and the realization of Hashem, then that goodness and that blessing has to show itself in every aspect of life, down to the most physical and the most earthy and the most mundane, that too is, if you're learning Torah, doing mitzvahs, expressing God, filled with blessings, filled with bracha. And that's the ultimate demonstration in the truth of your Torah. That you're not looking at godliness and holiness as a nice thing that is an enhancement in your life. It's not a nice thing. This is your reality. This is the reality of the world. This is my world, your world. This is what our lives are all about. So therefore, for everybody, Bichu Kaisai is important. For the greatest tzaddik. Because this actually is what will show if his Torah has become Chu Kaisai, has become engraved, has become his essence. When Mashiach comes, now only certain tzaddikim are in that state. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who is celebrating his yahrzeit, says in the Zohar, he says, all the days of my life, b'chat ketira is katarna, with one bond, I have bound myself, I have knotted myself to God. And today, on the day of this, on the day of my yahrzeit, so now, b'Hashem tishal el nafshi, in God my soul delights, and my soul is praised. And he says, in Hashem, be'achido, with him I am totally unified. Reb Shimon bar Yochai is completely submerged in Hashem, that he has, his identity lists his entire being as God. That's Reb Shimon bar Yochai. Of course, the ultimate example of bichu koisai, of engravement. That's Reb Shimon bar Yochai. When Mashiach comes, we're all going to be in that state. So we're all going to be, God is our reality, our body. What's my hand? My hand is an opportunity to do tefillin, tzedakah. That's my hand. And what's my feet? My feet are the mitzvahs that we do with our feet. That's our feet. And that's every aspect of our body. There's nothing other to them than the mitzvah that they observe. That's our identity. We have 248 mitzvahs. We have 248 organs, because that's what we are. We are Shabbos, mikveh, kashrus. That's our existence, because this is real, and Hashem is real, and Hashem is the reality of everything. And that's the ultimate showing of the truth of Torah, and the truth of mitzvahs, and the truth of Hashem. This also explains one of the last thing, why when Mashiach comes, the fruits of the trees are going to grow out instantly. The moment we plant a seed, we said in the beginning of this year, the earth will produce. The moment we plant that very same day, the tree will grow out and it will bear its fruits. Also, why we won't, the Mishnah, the Gemara says in Masechtas Ksubis, that we won't have to process wheat into make them into cinnamon buns. We're going to have finished instantly. We're not going to need to make clothing. The clothing is going to be on the spot. Why is that? Why does it take time for things, for fruits to grow, for everything to have? Obviously, I mean, if God is giving the blessing, then it should come immediately. And the answer is, the physical world now, until Mashiach comes, is not fully synchronized with its spiritual source. There's a little bit of a delay. It means even when the blessing is in the source, there is a delay in the transmission from its spiritual source into the physical blessing. So therefore, you can't you make a deposit and you can't withdraw the cash immediately. Like you have that story when you make a deposit in the bank and the funds are not available to a day or two, sometimes they hold it for 3 days. And we all know the aggravation of that. So the world is not perfectly synchronized with its source. But when Mashiach comes, at each and every one of us is going to be Bechukaisai Teilechu, which means Yiddishkeit is going to be our essence of who we are, without a possibility, even a question of a question. Should I do the mitzvah? Should I not? How much effort should I put in? What's the question? How can I not? How can I not do the mitzvah? How can I not give my life for the mitzvah? Because that's who I am. When we are perfectly synchronized with our source, then all of creation is going to be perfectly synchronized with its source. So if, when as a result of me learning, doing a mitzvah, it elicits divine blessing, and the source is connected, the final physical object is fully synchronized and fully attached to its source, so why should it take time? The minute the blessing is there, it will show up. And that's why we don't even have to process things. Process things means it's not, things are coming unfinished, and then we have to work it and make it until we can create things till they're edible, until we can use them. Because again, things are not completed. But when you have a world perfectly attached to its source, the Hashem wants to give you lunch, and he gives you a blessing, instantly you have finished lunch. It's available off the tree. It's available from the ground as is, without any delay. Because the world is going to be in perfect harmony with its source. And Hashem is going to be fully revealed in the world. No more lies, no more deceptions, no more blockages. We and all of creation will be an expression of the divine, and we will live in happiness and joy with infinite blessing forever and ever and ever. May we merit to see that right now. Oh.
sof shoyal im zeduze ayay me koy kevoydoy meshos sof shoyal im zeduze ayay me koy kevoydoy ayay me koy kevoydoy le yari tsalimo samburikh yoy mayri ayay me koy ayay me koy ayay me koy kevoydoy.